Hello everyone. Those of you that wonder what we're doing, I'm a family law solicitor. I jump on here for an hour a week and help you out with your family law questions. So for those of you that have got a family law question, or maybe you want to make a family law application or something like that and you need a hand, this is where you come. Hi Andrea, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good, I'm good, I'm good.
I've got a question for you on the different path this evening, if possible.
Sure, yeah.
A member of my family, sadly, is going for a divorce.
Yeah.
She has submitted her divorce papers, but on the divorce papers, she's ticked no to a financial order.
Okay.
I've obviously shared with her, from everything I've learned from you, how important that is and that she needs to get one.
Yeah.
She's now panicking about what to do and when she submits the paperwork for financial order.
So what stage is she at with the divorce?
She's only submitted the paperwork in the last couple of weeks.
Okay, so they're still married. I mean, it's of the essence that she puts in a financial order then before the divorce. She's going to really struggle if she goes all the way to final order in the divorce and doesn't get a financial order before that. So she can still get one, but it's more important that she does it before she gets that final order.
Okay, so because she's right at the beginning of the process, can she just put in that financial order as soon as she's got it all together and send it in?
She can only put it in when she's got the conditional order. She has to get that first.
Right.
Yeah.
So once she's got her conditional order, she can fill out the paperwork for her financial order and get that all sorted.
Well, it's not so much filling out the paperwork. They've got to come to an agreement. Hopefully they reach an agreement. And then a consent order will be drafted by the solicitor and sent in. If they don't reach an agreement and they end up having to go, let's just say for argument's sake, to court, then she just wants to get a wriggle on, really, is what I'm trying to say, because she doesn't have the luxury, given that she's ticked no, to sort of let things pass. So it's not about, we don't do paperwork for a financial order. We draft an order. Do you know what I mean? It's very different to the divorce.
So that's when she's going to need her hours consultation with a solicitor. Once they've sat down, come up with an agreement, she goes to one solicitor, her husband goes to another solicitor. They say it's fair and reasonable, then it can be sent to the court.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's it.
Brilliant. Thank you very, very much. I just wanted to double check.
Pleasure. Thanks, Andrea. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. Bye for now.
Suze, how can I help?
Hi, good evening.
Hello.
I hope you guys are all really well. I'm just after a little bit of advice around sort of child maintenance payments and mortgage payments.
Uh-huh.
Little bit of background. I've responded to my divorce petition last week. I was hoping for it not to sort of all be in play at the moment, because I was trying to get the mortgage and the equity transferred into my name as on request of my ex-partner, so I could take on the mortgage. Fast forward until today, we're trying to come to a decision and negotiation around whether we continue to pay the mortgage jointly. If that happens, we'll pay half and half. And at the moment, he's currently not paying any maintenance towards the children. He has them probably just under half the amount of time as co-parents. But I think my question mainly is, can he refuse to pay anything towards the children while still paying half the mortgage? Because obviously that's a separate entity to the children. It's a debt that he has taken on and is also responsible for to pay. So I was just after a little bit of advice, really.
Sorry, when you say a debt to the children, are you still talking about child maintenance?
Oh, no, sorry, about the mortgage being a separate entity to the children, because obviously his name's on the mortgage as well.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering where I stand with everything.
Yeah, so typically, I mean, you're right. If two people are named on the mortgage, then they're both held responsible for the repayments. However, if somebody has moved out of that property and the other person is quite insistent that they want to stay, the way the family court look at it is the person that stays there and has exclusive use of the property should really be making those payments on their own. Now, of course, we can, you know, talk about the fact that you may be entitled to spousal maintenance, all the rest of it, and he is offering to pay that. When it comes to child maintenance, that's very separate. So the family court don't really get involved with the child maintenance things. That has to be paid for regardless. Do you know what I mean? Regardless of what the relationship is. Are you living together or married or separated or what have you? So long as there's children, then the non-living parent should be making maintenance payments, really. But the mortgage repayments is a little bit trickier. And whether or not he should be paying it or you should be, you know, looking to get that in an order, you'd need to take some advice on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
Okay, yeah, that is really helpful, I think, because we're just at the beginning of the whole process as well. And just about, I mean, ideally, I did want to get the mortgage, as I say, transferred and the equity transferred into my name.
Yeah.
I mean, would that be advisable at the moment? Because obviously, if it does go down the course of going to court and if we can't come to a decision, would a judge look to say, well, even though you have been paying this equity, he's still entitled to some of that?
And he would be, absolutely. So again, where one person moves out and the other person stays in the property and maintains the property and makes the mortgage payments, we can't sort of claim that back, because the counter argument is, well, you've had exclusive use of that property since he left. Do you know what I mean? You've had the house to yourself since he's gone. And if you didn't want to pay those mortgage repayments all on your own, you know, some judges would take the view, well, then the house should have been placed on the market and sold, or you should have gone and let him stay. So we don't oftentimes succeed in claiming back the mortgage repayments, because the court would see that as, you know, you've been living there, they're your housing costs.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Gives me an idea for a video tomorrow. I might do that, because I do get asked that a lot, actually. You know, separated a while back, and I've been making all the payments, the mortgage repayments, and I want to be able to claim all that back. And you can't, you know, if you own a house 50-50 with anybody, regardless of who pays. If we flip that example, and let's take the example whereby, you know, husband or father is paying the mortgage payments, mom's just given birth, so she's at home. How unfair would it be if the argument was applied there? You know, sort of, well, the husband says, well, I've made all the mortgage repayments and I want all that back. So that's why the legal ownership's really important in that. Hello, Mart. How are you?
Hey, Tracy.
Hello, how are you?
I got two or three in my inbox and then I'm done.
Okay.
My ex-partner has my belongings. I've told the police about them not returning my items and putting in a false DV case on me. What do I do?
So ex has personal items. Not really a family law matter, but when I do get asked this, all you can do is arrange to go and pick your belongings up. So written letter, I'll be there on this date at this time, and I would ask the police if they could come with me to collect the items. You know, if you want to instruct a solicitor to send a letter, courts typically won't really get involved in all of that. If they've put in false allegations that this person has been, you know, has subjected the other person to domestic violence, that could stop them from actually, they might have an injunction, for example. So that could stop that person going to take their personal belongings. Use a third party is what I would say there. Use somebody who's completely neutral to go and get the bits and pieces. You know, and if the answer to that is, well, I don't know what I've left there, I can't remember, well, you're just going to have to get what you can remember. You know, if there's DV allegations and they haven't been dealt with yet and you can't go back to the house, then you've just got to make the best of a bad job, really.
No problem. The next one I have, can a court put an order in place where the parent cannot practice their PR? And if so, what does this mean?
So it wouldn't be an order that they can't practice it. They would remove their parental responsibility. So parental responsibility means that that person has the responsibility for the major decision making in the child's life, generally for medical and for educational and for religious decisions that need to be made. And then you also exercise your PR on a day-to-day basis if the child is in your care. So, you know, what they're going to wear and what they're going to eat and, you know, making sure that they're warm and that they're safe and et cetera, et cetera. If a court removes parental responsibility, which the court can do only in exceptional circumstances, mind, it's got to be pretty bleak for the court to remove PR. well, then you have no rights or responsibilities for that child, no more than the neighbour next door. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't have the PR anymore. You're still the biological parent, of course you are. Nothing can change that. But with regard to any rights and responsibilities, they're taken away.
Yeah. The next one is, I've left the marital home because of DV. I need to start a divorce, etc. But he doesn't know where I live. Do I have to disclose this? Also, the children don't want to see him. They have refused. They're nearly 16 and 13. But he turns it around to me. Where do I stand?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me there's a little bit of manipulation going on here. No, you don't have to disclose where you live if you really don't want that person to know. And if you do need to make any sort of court application, the form that you need is a C8. If you complete the C8 form, then that's the court's green light to know that they can't release your address to the other person, and you don't put your address on the actual application form. The 16-year-old won't be part of the family court system anymore because they're of an age now where they'll vote with their feet. The 13-year-old's very, you know, close to being 16. And at the end of the day, the court's not going to force that person to have contact with dad. So, no, if there's been DV and, you know, he doesn't know where they live at the moment, then that's fine. Doesn't have to.
That's fine. And the next, the final one I have so far is, I'm waiting to know if I can make an application for spousal maintenance whilst waiting for the divorce to be completed, as my husband is not responding to matters. And if I can, would this be done with a D11 application?
So, you've got to be really careful with spousal maintenance because it's based on need. So when I'm explaining it to my clients, the minute your spouse walks out the door, if they're taking their salary with them, then you could be left with a financial need. Now, if it's a need, it's immediate. So the first thing I'll always ask a new client is, do we need spousal maintenance? Because if we do, we've got to be applying for it straight away. The reason for that is, if you wait 12 months and then say to the court, I need it now, the court will say, but you haven't needed it for the last 12 months. So is it really a need? You know, how did you get by in the last 12 months? So I wouldn't be, the minute she's issued the divorce petition, then she makes the application and she does it on a Form A. And I don't want to get too legal, but prior to the divorce being made, it's called maintenance pending suit. So pending the suit of the divorce. So if she sees those words on the form, that's what she wants to tick. It then becomes spousal maintenance after the divorce. But tell her not to wait, just to do it now on a Form A.
Brilliant. Smashing, Trace. That's all I got for you with a minute.
Thanks, Mark. Speak to you later.
Yes, ciao.
Bye. Right, Jason, you are up next. Let me take you off mute. How can I help?
Hello. I'm going through a divorce at the moment with my ex-wife. Yeah. We separated 18 months ago. Yeah. She was the one, I'm the one that wanted out of the marriage, but she's the one that applied for the divorce. So the stage that we're at between us at the moment is arguing the toss over the marital assets. Now, there isn't really many there isn't any savings to argue over, and I'm not the kind of person that's going to start saying I want half the furniture and half the car and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
She pleaded with me not to make a claim on her private pension. Again, I have no interest because the way I'm built, that's not my pension, so I don't want it.
Yeah.
So the only marital asset that I feel there is our marital home.
Yeah.
But the marital home, I was never on the mortgage. I'm not on any title deeds or anything. Because when we bought the property in 2017, 3 years after we married, I was in a 0 hours contract job at the time. So we could get a mortgage, but the rate was horrendous. So in the end, my ex-wife's twin sister said, well, why don't we put the mortgage in their names? And it made it easier to get the mortgage. So then I was never on the deeds or anything. And for the whole 5 years that my wife and I were living in that house, her sister always held the opinion, this isn't my house. I'm just literally a name on the mortgage, so that you was able to get the mortgage. She never paid a penny into the house. She never paid the deposit, the solicitor, nothing. Not a single penny came from her side ever. So now that we're going through the divorce, my wife's trying to say, you don't own any of this house. You don't own any of this. It's 50% her, 50% her sister. And she said, at best, if you look it, I'll let you have half of my half. So at the moment, I'm trying to now work out, do I just have to lie down and accept that and only get 25% of the equity in the property? Or am I able to fight for more? Because I don't believe for a second that in years to come, her sister will retain 50% of the property. I know that this is just a ploy so that I get a smaller share. Because I am aware from watching all your Instagrams and stuff that even though I wasn't on the mortgage, I am entitled to a share, whatever that share may be. But this idea that, you're getting a very small amount because you don't own any of this house. It's me and my sister. Where do I stand in regard to that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the matrimonial home, or it was the former matrimonial home. So absolutely, regardless of whose name is on the mortgage and whose name is on the land registry, you definitely have a share of that. Now, as we stand legally, your wife's kind of half right. She owns 50% of the property, so that is put on the table as the matrimonial asset, and then you are entitled to a share of that. However, as long as, and the success of your case, Jason, will depend on the evidence that you have, an email thread, a conversation that you remember, because what you could then argue is what we call a promissory estoppel. So yes, it was put into the sister's name and the wife's name, but the intention was always that it was going to be mine and my wife's house, and the sister was only there in name. And of course, for the last 5 years, you have been paying the mortgage, I'm sure, or contributing towards the mortgage. Why would you do that if?
From when we bought it in 2017 until when we separated, it was me and my ex-wife that paid the mortgage and the bills. And from my business account, I always sent my half into the joint account and referenced it as bills. And but we, do you know what I mean? Because I get that, like, obviously, in the eyes of the law, it's them two's names at the land registry and stuff. But part of me thinks, how can someone that never paid a penny into it be allowed to have 50% of it?
And look, the court take all of that into consideration. It's going to come down to the evidence that you've got by way, as I say, of emails, etc. And obviously whatever contribution was made by the sister. If there was no contribution made, say for her name, then you've got a good chance of success there.
Right, okay, that's great stuff.
All right. Perfect.
Perfect. Thanks for
Okay,
that.
lovely. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Naya, I'm going to come to you next. I think you are next in the queue. What's your question?
I was just wondering, what is generally the court's position on children that are under the age of a year old with regards to contact with the non-resident parent?
Yeah, so we don't see a lot of overnight contact, Nia, unless the parties are in agreement to it. It tends to be smaller bite-sized chunks, and again, it depends on baby's feeding as well. If baby's still breastfeeding, it might just be a couple of hours, maybe sort of 5 times a week. But it does depend on the parents, parents that are able to co-parent successfully, and as baby sort of starts to get a bit more on solids, if they want to do overnight, they can. It's very bespoke children's law, because it really does depend on the family dynamic, the concerns of the parents as to why maybe they're not in agreement with the other parent, and of course the needs of the child, the age of the child. Obviously we've got some children that have got disabilities, and we have to take all of that into account. So it's not a kind of one size fits all answer that I can give you.
Yeah, I think what I'm kind of worrying about is the contact was agreed prior when I was on maternity leave. Me and my ex-partner separated when our son was a month old. So he's not lived with my ex-partner much of his life at all so far. And the contact has sort of increased gradually to about 3 nights a week. Oh no, 3 nights a fortnight, sorry. I've had to change it since I've gone back to work because I can't commit to sort of like the early evening collections when I'm in work, but I've not sort of reduced the contact at all. I've kept that at the same amount. But now it's being disputed and going to court, and I suppose I'm just worried in the sense of sort of like how court do view that considering he's only 8 months old.
Yeah, I mean, look, it essentially, if you two can't agree on how much time the baby is going to spend, and baby's not sort of needing to be with you or, you know, being fed by you, then the you know, it will depend, I suppose, on what dad's asking for. I've known, you know, 50-50 shared care at that age. It's really hard, Nia. You know what I mean? If you've got concerns, they're more likely listened to with precision the younger the child is, because obviously CAFCAS can't speak to the child, so they really do rely on the parents and just observations.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Nia. Somebody's just asked me on the TikTok about the TILATA. What is a TILATA application? So, well, TILATA is legislation. So it's the Trust of Land and Trustees Act. And it's how we determine unmarried couples' finances. If people are married, we're doing it under the MCA, the Matrimonial Causes Act. But if they're not married, we're doing it under TILATA. So the Trust of Land and Trustees Act. Right, Reemon, you are up next. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. So my question is about, I had an Islamic marriage abroad.
Yeah.
And we did an Islamic divorce here in the UK.
Yeah.
By a Sharia council.
Yeah.
Do I still need like a UK civil divorce as well? Is my marriage seen as legal here in the UK?
Did you register your marriage?
No.
So you weren't, in the eyes of England and Wales, you weren't married. So you would be seen as just a cohabiting couple, a couple that live together.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye. Yoko, you are up next. Let me take you off mute. How are you?
I'm good, Tracy. How are you?
I'm good. How can I help?
Good. I just want to ask a question. My partner has a C100 in place for his child. It's been in place since November, but the mother is constantly breaching the order. So missing FaceTime calls, not communicating if she's going to be late for FaceTime calls, and always late for drop off. The order went heavily in her favour because she's currently pregnant with her new partner's child.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, in your opinion, would it be worth us taking it back to court before she has the baby? Or is a judge not likely to amend the order because it was put in place because she was pregnant?
Yes. Yes, that's why the courts put that in place. And no, it's probably not going to be worthwhile trying to enforce that. So is the breach that she's late?
She's constantly late, but also she won't answer the phone on the FaceTime calls. She'll message maybe 10 minutes before saying that they're not available yet. It's plans that she's probably had in place for a couple of days.
Yeah.
It's just not great communication, really.
I mean, the better, I think, application would be, and look, if you've already been to court once during the pregnancy, it might be too soon to take it back again. But the better one would be to remove the obstacles. So if FaceTime calling is a problem, then let's think of something else. If she can't adhere to that, then let's think of something else. You know, it might be that we have a bit more direct contact rather than the FaceTime contact. Again, I don't know anything about your case, but what the court's looking to do is, a lot of people go to court for the answers, but what the court wants essentially is for you to present the problem and then to present a solution to the problem.
Okay.
And whoever presents the best solution wins. That's effectively how it works, really. So, you know, to go to court and say she's late and she's always breaching the order for the FaceTime, and I want you to do something about it, judge. And then judge looks across at a pregnant woman. It's really difficult for the court. But if you can say, look, I get that she's struggling. I get that, you know, she's at a time in her pregnancy where maybe she, you know, she can't be on time or she can't do the FaceTime calls or whatever. That's the problem and I understand it. So rather than having a FaceTime call, how about we get a few extra hours on the Saturday morning? Actually, it might do her a favour and give her a break and blah, 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 blah. I don't know if that's possible, but you see where I'm going with it. Here's the problem, Judge, and here's the solution.
Perfect. And just quickly as well, whenever she misses these calls or she's late, off the back of a parenting course my partner had to do, he's sending a message just to sort of remind her or ask her why she's not available.
Yeah.
Would a judge... Is that really necessary to do? Because the times and days were set by her and she has a copy of the order. She knows when they are. Would we be expected to constantly have to send those messages to remind, or is that just sort of good practice to show that we're really trying.
I would keep sending it, because there may come a time when the court is asking both of them to do statements. So one of the things that I'd be doing is attaching evidence of those text messages to the back of the order. So here's the order that says every Tuesday. Here's all the text messages evidencing that showing evidence that Tuesdays were missed. And here's all the non-replies to my text messages. And I attach all of that as Exhibit 1. So I would keep doing it, yeah.
Okay, perfect. That's all great. Right. Thank you so much for your help.
Pleasure. Okay, bye.
Thank you, bye.
Superstar, you are next. How can I help?
Yeah, what it is, I've got unfortunately social involvement, and they put my children into temporary foster care, but now they're looking at trying to do an interim care order.
Yeah.
However, there's no questions on my parenting, so I'm just wondering what I can do to actually try and fight this.
Look, if the facts are that there's no questions about your parenting, then why do we have an interim care order? And I'm not asking you to answer that. That's the question that I'd be putting to social services. You know, if I was in your
shoes. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I do have a reason of why they're doing it. But then, obviously, they've made a serious allegation against one of my daughter's dads. And it's a false allegation, but obviously, you know, we're trying to fight his innocence for that. So
okay. This is gonna sound really harsh, but when it comes to social services having concerns about the children, what's gonna push them further away is where you're trying to stick up for the adult. You've almost got to be in line with social services. Do you know what I mean? It can be really tricky. But then,
obviously all I want is obviously my children back home, you know what I mean? So,
but then if they have concerns about one of your ex-partners, you know, address that. Reassure social services that that's all done.
Yeah, that's what we've been trying to do, because obviously, you know, we've said that what they're trying to basically say is absolutely ludicrous accusation, and it is impossible to have happened. And Yeah, they just don't seem to listen to us whatsoever.
But you know why? Can I make a suggestion? Because you're challenging them. If they have made the allegation about your ex and it isn't true, don't make it your business to defend that, because your priority is getting the kids back. And if he's your ex, why bother? You know, sometimes...
Well, technically, we would be together if it wasn't for this. But, you know, that's a different matter.
So I suspect that because you are challenging them and saying the decision that you've made or the allegations that you've made aren't true, that makes them more concerned. Do you know what I mean? And I would say that's why the children are now going to be subject to an interim care order.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, would you advise me getting legal? I mean, I know they've advised for me to get a solicitor anyway.
I think you do need to get a solicitor, but not to fight them, to work with them.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm not obviously, you know, I have said to them that I'm not going to obviously work against them so much, because I'm going to work with them, because obviously I do want my children back. But I think it's more the fact that it's gone from a voluntary to now looking at an interim. And I'm like, well, why? You know what I mean?
And you know what? A lot of times it can just be lack of communication. You know, so, you know, a misinterpretation of what they're saying, misinterpretation of what you're saying, you know, and sometimes you... lawyers can come in and just get everybody on the same path again and reassure social services that actually this is what my client's trying to do, and obviously give you some advice as to how you know direct what it is that you're saying.
Yeah,
all right. But yeah,
we basically tried to say, you know, there's been a few people that's obviously tried to say, look, you know, there is no problem with this person, and obviously there's no problem with me, and but feels like no one's listening. So.
But that's the thing. If social services have made their mind up that there is a problem with this person, you have got to accept that. Right or wrong, you've got to accept it. Because if you try to challenge that, then you're at risk of losing the children. You know, the main priority is the children. And as hard as it might be, where I don't, I suppose, where I'm not fully on board with the question is, he's your ex. So that you know, for me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome. Okay, thanks, bye.
Thank you, bye.
I don't work a lot with people. Hey, Mark, I'm just going to finish off on that one and say I don't work a lot with people who are in social services and have the children taken into care, because a lot of that is covered with legal aid. So for those of you that are perhaps, you know, inquiring about legal aid, give that civil legal advice line a call, 0345 345 4345, okay? It can be a minefield a lot of times, and people don't quite understand where they're going wrong, whereas, you know, somebody else might just see, this is what you're doing wrong, just do this. Anyway, thank you, Mart. You've come back with more questions. How can I help?
Yeah, so first of all, if I don't read anybody's questions that sent it to me this week, I promise you I'll be the first one in the lounge next week to ask these ones. But I know we're pressing for time, Chase, so I'll just give you the quickest ones.
Yeah.
So the question is, my ex-husband has taken a lower paid job on purpose. He has been on a circa of 130k a year and now has gone to 95 so that I get less money, no settlement.
Yeah.
Will the judge look at this at a FDR in August?
They will, because this lady is going to tell the judge that. So he's earning 95 at the moment, judge, but history tells us, let's look at his bank statements and let's look at his P16, his tax returns, that he has the ability to earn 135 and in excess of that with bonuses and what have you. So I'm going to invite the court today to consider the salary at 135 and that, you know, something like that. What you're basically saying is, without saying it, he's trying to deceive the court and do me out of some money.
Yeah, yeah. There was a little bit after she put, so I've only not just seen it. Is jewellery gifted to one person from family and friends deemed as a marital asset?
Look, the Form E asks you to list anything that you have over £500. It will depend on the value of those. As long as there's enough assets elsewhere, the court's not going to be asking you to go down the pawn shop and cash that in. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, if we've got maybe, I don't know, £500,000 in jewellery but nothing in the house, there's every chance the court might just say, well, look, you'll have to start selling the jewels. So it does depend. But generally speaking, no. The person who's been gifted the jewellery is allowed to keep the jewellery.
Brilliant, smashing. The next one is, if my husband dies before the final order and I am still married, do I have to pay for the solicitor's fees? He had nothing in his estate and his solicitor's saying they're going to send me an invoice and an action letter, but they haven't yet and it's been 2 weeks now.
So this question came up before Missy asked it, I think, and I assumed that they were going through the divorce at the time. But if the husband was taking legal advice about something like non-divorce related, then typically the debt should die with him. I mean, it's difficult to know. I mean, depending on what the advice was that he was asking for, I don't know. Was it to do his will? I don't know. So I can't answer that question, really. Typically, a debt will die with that person, but obviously there are situations where it won't. So she needs to speak to someone. If she emails me with a bit more information, I'll be able to answer that a bit better, I think.
Yeah, no worries. I'll forward your email address onto her. And the last one I have for you, me and my husband split 12 years ago. My mum died 3 years ago and we owned a house outright. I have two brothers and no other family, no will. I think this is more of a probate, but I'm going to ask it just in case.
Yeah.
Is my husband still entitled to half of my share, as he stated in the divorce proceedings, and applying for a financial order, and I can't afford to buy him out of my own mum's house?
So inheritance, the rule of thumb is that we'll always try to ring fence inheritance, okay? We will do that successfully if the marital assets provide us with enough money to make sure everyone's rehoused appropriately. And of course, if she hasn't received the inheritance yet, it's going to be harder for husband to make a claim against that. If the mother has passed and we're in probate, it's still hard. Even if she's received it, if there's still enough assets in the matrimonial asset pool, then no, the inheritance will be ring-fenced. So she should be
with this, Trace.
Yeah.
So the husband and the wife owned the mum's house.
Oh, sorry, I missed that bit. Okay. Well, if they owned it, then it's theirs, isn't it?
So what she's asking is...
If that was the matrimonial home, then he is going to be entitled to a share of it. Absolutely is. Sorry, Mark, I misunderstood the question. So, yeah, if it's the matrimonial home, regardless of where it came from, if it's their home, matrimonial home, and even if it's in her sole name and not his, yes, he will be entitled to a share of that.
Right, OK. Just to be clear on a quick one.
Yeah.
So husband and wife bought mum's house. Mum has now died. And obviously she can't buy him out. So it's the same thing, yeah?
Oh, it's the same thing, yeah. So she's bought mum's house. They both live in it. It then becomes the former mum's... Well, go on.
I think they bought mum's house for mum to live in.
Yeah.
They are now... Mum has died.
Yeah.
They've been split 12 years ago, but obviously now mum has died.
Yeah.
She can't afford to buy mum's house, basically, from him.
Yeah.
So...
But we then... So the first place we go to is the legal ownership. So, because the question keeps... What I'm hearing is, we bought mum's house. We bought mum's house. So if both bought mum's house and they both legally own it, then... he's gonna have half of it, I would have thought. And if she can't afford to buy him out, that's unfortunate. But if they've both bought it, then he owns it, half of it.
Brilliant. Smashing. That's all I have for you this week, Tris.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. See you next week.
Tris. Bye.
Guys, I'm going to wrap it up there. It's 7:40 and I'm absolutely starving, haven't had my dinner. So thank you so much for joining me in Discord Lounge this evening. Back again next Tuesday at 6:30. Apologies, there's always so many people left with their hands up at the end, and yet it takes us half hour to get warmed up. Apologies to all of you, but I am back here next Tuesday at 6:30. Be sure to come and join me then, and we'll get through as many family law questions as we possibly can. Until then, guys, take care, and I'll see you then.